Hello, everyone. Welcome. Oh, wow. I didn't even know. It is the 1st of October today. How did that happen? So, welcome to, wow, I don't really pay attention to the time clearly. It is the 16th round of SPSM. It's our second training call. Got my handouts here. And I know we're at the beginning of these training calls. So, just a reminder again, all these calls are recorded. Everything is uploaded to the site within a couple days, if not a day. The audio, the video, speaker view, gallery view, and the transcripts from all of the things that we speak. And the handouts are all on the spot where you would have logged in to get to this training call. So we have, I always say it's my favorite call, but I think they're all my favorites. But this one is one of the special ones, I think, because it's basic and yet it really goes into the foundations of what we're doing here. For some of you know this, it's old stuff. You're here for a review, you're here to keep building your knowledge and your learning. For others, this is the first time you've walked down this block with us and you're still trying to figure out what is this regulation thing? What is this capacity building thing? What does it mean to be with my sensations? What does it mean to orient? And I know you're working on these practices in the lessons. And it takes time. I often use the analogy of a language. Has anybody here learned a second language as an adult and become fluent? Like the kind of fluent, yeah, someone's like, no, the kind of fluent where you can be helicoptered in to that country of the language with no guide, no dictionary, no Google, and you can completely live and converse even with the slang in that nation. And it is possible. Someone said it's impossible, but what does it mean? It means full immersion. It means you can't just learn off of your app on your phone, because I know there's lots of great apps for learning languages. You have to immerse and you have to trust and you have to make mistakes. And you need to connect to the environment in that language and have lots of different interactions. So when it comes to, and I know often the Europeans, kudos to you all, often you speak sometimes two, three, four. I've met some people who speak six languages, and I'm amazed by that. Whereas a lot of us English-speaking folk, we struggle with one language sometimes, and the second one we're a bit rusty at because we learned a little bit in school. But learning a second language as an adult is the same as learning nervous system regulation as an adult. I'll pause on that sentence. Many of us didn't get that when we were young, and that's okay. I didn't get it. I know a lot of our moderators didn't get it. Some of us had good enough connection, but we know in our day and age, it could always have been better. And that's kind of what we're here to do. We're here to work on improving our capacity, improving our regulation, connecting with the environment. So, as I say that, take a second to connect to your environment. And just tune in to what you notice, where your eyes might want to take you, where your attention might want to take you. How are you tuned into your hearing sound? How are you tuned into your temperature? Is your temperature feeling pretty good and even, or is there parts of you that are a little cool, cold, maybe a bit too warm? How about your posture? Is there a need to shift? Is there a need to reconnect with what you're sitting on? Have you taken the time today to really touch and connect with your legs, with your arms, with your head? We are always touching and moving our hands over our body, whether it's to clean ourselves, to brush our hair, to feed, to clothe. But often we do it in a very unconscious way. So just notice if you have connected with your body today in a intentional way, or have you just been zooming, literally zooming on Zoom, but zooming through life in a little bit of old survival stress or old patterns of behavior where you get trapped in the doing, the go, go, go. And there's nothing wrong with being fast in our presentation of how we move through life. But the question is, can you be fast without being hurried? There's a difference, right? If you've ever watched someone who's very skillful at something like a chef cooking or a pilot flying a plane, or someone driving a car and they're really present, there is a quickness and a speed, but there's an awareness of everything happening at the same time. And so we can be fast without being adrenalized. And this is a very big part of what we wanted to have learned when we were young, and some of us didn't. This ability, who remembers learning about the parasympathetic nervous system and the biology of stress videos? There was that part called the ventral vagal. Remember that? The social engagement part, the part that we grow as we connect with our primary caregivers. And we'll get into this today. But this ventral vagal, this parasympathetic, it modulates our heart rate activity. And so it allows us to speed up without being adrenalized. So that is why that social engagement and that attunement and co-regulation is so important for us, not only when we're young, when we're learning this for the first time, but as adults, learning how to gain regulation as an adult. So that's what we're working with here. That's what we're working with engaging with the environment. That's what we're working with engaging with our positive resources, like that warm cup of tea or that hot water bottle or the music or the nature or the person or the pet. That connection puts us into that more ventral vagal social engagement state, and it better modulates our heart rate. So we'll learn more of this, and you're going to get more into this as you get into the labs and into the lessons. But I just wanted to add that little bit. So let's get into the first page here, page number one. There's a good resource someone put in the chat. I'll read it for those who aren't here. I'm eating cheese with olive oil and drinking tea right now. That sounds lovely. So I hope it's very yummy and it's a good resource. Brings me back to Europe. So, the importance of the biology of stress videos. So, I've just primed you a little bit with this distinction of the parasympathetic nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system, that sort of thing. So, the first line, education is key. Key is the words, or word, I should say. Word, words. Education is key. The reason why education is key, and this is maybe something that's a bit more macro that you haven't considered, or maybe some of you had, because we're human, we have mammalian physiology, mammal physiology. So the same physiology as the dogs and the cats and the whales and the lions and the tigers and the bears. And we also have some reptile physiology in us, right? We also have a single cell physiology in us. But we also have this higher brain. So everybody humor me, bring your hand to your forehead and say, hello, higher brain. Right. This thing is so powerful here, especially where our forehead is. And it allows us to learn. Feels good. Hands are a little cold today. It allows us to learn amazing things, but it also allows us to repress and not feel things. We can override so much of what we're feeling because we also have this powerful, it's a computer really in our brain. Parts of our brain are so strong. So education is key because we're not living in that natural symbiotic way with nature the way we would have hundreds of thousands of years ago. When we started to domesticate plants and animals, when we started to industrialize, when we started to have electricity and all these things that kept us out of our natural rhythm, that's when we started to disconnect from our physiology and our natural healing capacities. Now, of course, we also, many back then had deficiencies. And isn't it interesting that we can actually be healthier now than back then because we are getting all our vitamins and minerals and nutrients, and dental work allows us to keep our teeth longer and all the things. So while we're living longer, we also have to work on our nervous system physiology, hence why you're all here, because we don't want to be trapped in that mammalian survival stress, in that reptilian survival stress. Very important to understand why education is key. It allows us so that when we are having that blip of what we might call anxiety or panic, which is essentially survival stress, which is essentially fight flight, we can say to ourselves with our higher brain, whoa, this heart rate spiking has nothing to do with my current situation. This must be old. This must be the old balls in my pool. Going back to the first training call about swimming pools and beach balls as my analogy. And when we've had earlier traumas, which you will learn more and more about, and you would have learned some of this on the early developmental calls on Q&A with Jen Greer, the first one, we might not have any memory of what occurred when we were little, and we might not even have emotion. It was pre-verbal, it was pre-emotion. It was just pure physiology. This is what explains the spikes in heart, the unexplainable. I can't explain why I'm all of a sudden so scared when I'm really in a safe space. These can be signs of old stuff coming up and through. So when we have education, it allows us to assess the data. Is this actually a real threat, or is this old stuff that's coming through? Next line down. We want to continue to create more exit paths and expand space in the nervous system and body system. So, by exit paths, I mean of that pool of the body. So, this refers to last week's call, hence why this is quick points here. So, first bullet point, we want to grow the pool, the body capacity. Pool is the word. And everything you do in SBSM, even the education, is growing your capacity. You know how they say knowledge will, educating people is so important because when they have education, they understand things a bit better. They can make different choices. They see things differently. So, this, even the education, grows our capacity. So, we want to grow the pool. Second bullet point, we want to take out the balls. The balls. So don't let the acute stress, acute is just a fancy way of saying in the moment, stick. We want to release old, stored, procedural, that's the word, procedural memories. This will get covered more in biology of stress video number 5. So some of you might not have gotten to that yet. So that will, this is a preview for that. So we want to take out the balls. Don't let the in the moment stresses stick and stay to the best of our ability. And then the next line, it's not important. It's not is the word. It's not important to process every single event. every single event. Because that would be impossible. We're not going to remember every single time we fell and hit our knee. We were maybe yelled at in school. We felt a little scared. All those things are valid, but to process every single event is going to be hard. But when we process certain events, it's like it serves as a proxy, if you know that word. It serves as a connection to the other events, and it actually helps other. It's like one ball leaves and a few Velcro to it and poof, leaves the building, right? Leaves the building. Next line down. Biological embodiment. So this is learning how to listen. That's the next word, learning how to listen to the body's signals. Fancy word for that, interoception. I covered that on the call last week. The perception of the internal environment. So next line down, how to practice somatic first aid. And I have this in quotes because when we think of first aid, what do you think of? Has anybody taken a first aid course or a CPR course where you learn how to give, resuscitation to the airways, pump chest compressions, bandage wounds, burns, all that kind of stuff? So we often think of that as first aid. You get your first aid kit that you have in your house or in your car. But there's ways to do somatic first aid, nervous system first aid. So what I'm about to go through here are simple things that we've already done, but I'm going to highlight them. So we're going to write down four things that you can do when a minor, meaning a little thing, not life harming, that's the word. When a little thing, an acute minor thing, not life harming event or stress takes place. Right. So, first one, orient. So, connecting to the outside world. And I'll give an example in a second. I'll give an example in a second. Orient. First word. Second word. And oh, by the way, these are in no means order of importance. This comes back to that language thing. I can't telepathically give you a hologram of all these words, so we have to go linear. But that doesn't mean that orienting is the most important one. It's just what I've chosen to put there. So orient. The next one, connect to the ground. That means feel the chair, the ground, your feet. Maybe if you're outside, it's the grass. Maybe if it's the concrete. Maybe you're sitting in your car and you just had a near miss accident. And you're pulled over. Maybe I'll use that as an example. And you feel your car seat. You feel the steering wheel. You look outside, you roll down the windows, you get some air, you have a little water, that kind of thing. Number three, you notice your breath. And the key is, how can you not change the breath? And this is the tricky one. I just saw someone laugh at that. I will say, notice your breath, and there will be this again. This is where our brains are so darn strong. It will shift, we'll change it just with the thought of breath. We're like, oh, right, I have to breathe. I can guarantee everyone here is breathing. So the question is, how can you sense the breath in that time of stress and be curious and go, oh, it's a little tight? Or, oh, I need to really breathe. Or, oh, I feel like I need to cry. Or I need to, I'll use the case of a near miss driving where you can pull over. I need to squeeze the steering wheel. I want to just squeeze and get some anger out because I almost got into an accident. Next line down, follow impulse. So follow your biological impulse. Which can be anything. I just sort of said it. It could be to orient. It could be to have a bit of water. It could be to phone your partner or your spouse or a friend and say, oh my God, I can't believe what just happened. I'm feeling a little anxious, a little nervous. It could be popping on some music that's calming, or maybe some music that helps you get some of that anger energy out, right? It could be to get up again in the context of in your car, you almost had an accident, but you didn't, and you're safe. You might need to get out and go for a walk down the sidewalk, in a parking lot, that kind of thing. So number two, and I'll keep using this example of, let's say you almost got into a car accident, but you didn't. One scenario is you can pull over, right? Yeah, this is resourcing to something that is positive. Let's say you can't pull over. Let's say you have to keep driving, which happens. You're on a big freeway and there's really nowhere to pull over. You can still connect to the ground. You can still, the ground of your car. You can still orient to the road, which you need to do anyway. You can still notice your breath. You can still follow your impulse, have a sip of water. Maybe you start to orient for an exit so that you pull over. Because what'll happen is if you have a near miss and you're not able to come down a little bit, you will be more at risk for getting into another accident because you're going to be on threat mode, survival mode. But let's say you can't. So, final line down. Let's say if you can't process the somatic experience, that's the two words there, in the moment. So let's just say you can't process in the moment. Make a conscious note. Those are the next two words. Make a conscious note to do so when you have time and space. I'm going to turn now to the second page. We'll keep going here, and then I'm going to give another example. So, this is more general, but let's say you can't process it in the moment. So you get home, do some nervous system health basics. So that's the word health basics. Those are the things we just mentioned: orienting, noticing breath, sensing the ground, resourcing, following impulse. Maybe you need to take a hot shower. Maybe you need to make yourself a cup of tea. Maybe you need to turn on some music. Maybe you need to cry. Maybe you feel the basics and then stuff starts to come through, and that's what we want. The next line down, I already sort of said this, but we'll repeat it. Seek out some support and social engagement. Social engagement are those two words. So again, that comes back to that ventral vagal portion of the parasympathetic nervous system that you're learning about in the biology of stress videos. That actively calms the heart down. It directly goes to what's called the pacemaker of the heart. It's called the SA node. And when we have a little bit more ventral, and it doesn't have to be with a person, it could be listening to music, it could be watching a funny show, it could even be connecting with the outside world and feeling a smile come over your face, those sorts of things that can help shift and bring the heart rate down and the stress response down. This is why the job of the first responder, to use the accident analogy, firemen, police, ambulance, if they have a really good demeanor and bedside manner and they're friendly and they're kind and they really connect with you, that can help such that you don't get PTSD from that event. Peter Levine actually writes about this in a few of his books about how he was hit by a car near his house one day. And there was a woman, I believe, nearby, and she connected and waited with him while the first responders came in. And he says, I'm sure that if it wasn't for her, if I had been alone, and we don't know that, maybe he would have been fine, but he suspects that if he had been alone, it would have made it more likely that he would have had a little bit of PTSD from that bad accident, and being hit by a car is a pretty big deal, right? So that social engagement can really help. This is why when kids hurt themselves, we want to connect with them when the time is right, as opposed to, oh, you're fine, get up, keep pushing, right? That's how that creates our functional freeze when we're really young. When something scary happens, and then as little people, we're told, there's nothing wrong, you're fine, get up, keep going. And because of the kiddo's higher brain, they're going to believe that and they're going to become conditioned to not feel when they have stress happen. Hence the story of a lot of humanity, right? This pushing through. So social engagement is more than just connecting with a friendly face. It is very physiological and it's written in our DNA and on our biology. When you don't connect with a human infant, they do not survive. And we know this through a lot of things that occurred. I believe it was post-World War II, and it's possible there's still situations like this where you have orphans and orphanages, and they might be given all the food that they need, proper care and shelter and clothing, but they're not touched, they're not connected to, and they die. Because their heart goes into so much distress that their system just can't handle it. So it is very important in this physiological way. We want to connect with nature if we can. So connect with nature. Again, this comes back to what I said at the very, very beginning about our connection with the natural world has been really disconnected. And for some of us, more so than others, you know, we do have a nature practice. We live near a park. We make a point to go and be by the river, by the stream, even if it's a park in a big city like New York. You know, we know that cities that don't have a lot of green space doesn't do so, they don't do so well. They help us, this nature, it helps us calm down in certain cases. It's not enough though. I've also heard people were like, are like, I go into nature and I actually don't calm down. And that is an element of probably early survival and feeling a little too exposed and raw in the natural elements. Again, I have here literal or visualization. So, because of this higher brain, again, we can visualize the trees. We can visualize, and even if I say it right now, for those who have been in forests, been by the ocean, been by rivers, and I sure hope most of you have, you can feel that essence, that smell of salt water, the smell of moss, the smell of fall, those sorts of things, the smell of summer. So, how can you visualize with that natural world to help bring the system down? Make use of resources. That's the next one. I've already said a lot of this, but make use of resources is the word. So many resources out there. This is what you covered in the first lesson of Lab One was researching your resources. So just some for fun, music, movement, maybe a spiritual practice, anything that grounds you and connects you in the here and now, in the moment. The other example I wanted to give, this is for the parents. I know there's got to be parents here. Your job, obviously, as a parent raising little humans is to be the guide, be the co-regulator, be the person who is safe and the protector and the teacher. And so, if your little one has an acute stress or an accident, and that happens, bones are broken, falls are had, you know, burns happen, all these things, that's where you've got to put your stuff aside. And be with them and be calm and connected and let them experience their pain, their frustration. Maybe there is a severe accident and you need to take them to a hospital, that kind of thing. In such a case, that's where you want to wait to process your own fear and your own survival stress later. It's been shown that when kids have an adult who is more scared than they are of the accident, it actually makes the kid more scared. So the face of the parent or the caregiver will signal to the kid how bad it is. And so we don't want stone cold nothing, but we don't want the parent or the caregiver to have a look of absolute terror and disgust and, oh my God, this is horrible. And maybe it is horrible what's occurred to the kid, but you got to put on the first responder face. And then that's where you would process your stuff. And you want to process your stuff later when little one is safe and good and you know they're in good hands. All right, next piece. Take a second to just reconnect to whatever you need to. I'm going to have a bit more water here. So the next few pages, this is one of those things where I remember when I was in university, and some of you who've been in such higher level educations who have gone like to even post grad level, this might be familiar to you. But I remember a professor saying to us in like first year something, I don't know what it was, you're going to learn stuff this year that in 5 years is going to be wrong. Because we have to start with basics. And then you start to see what it really is. And then you go, oh, wow. Okay. It's way more complex than we thought, but you have to start with the basics. The difference here, none of the things I'm about to say are wrong. But as we grow more capacity, you will find that the health basics that you're getting really familiar with won't serve all the time when you're trying to move a ball out of your pool. What that means is part of gaining more capacity is getting these basics on board, resourcing, orienting, following impulse, potent posture, capacity, like feeling, connecting. But eventually there comes a time where you move what we call old survival stress out. It's just another fancy word for old trauma. And you actually have to kind of take the roller coaster ride, that's a metaphor, and ride that ride and go through the emotions, the sensations, the shaking. This is where the shaking responses might come out, the trembling of the lip, the feeling of ugh, disgust. We have to ride those intense somatic experiences so that we can get them out and heal them and integrate them and have them kind of leave the building. For a lot of us at this point, we're working with learning more about building capacity. And the word we used last week in the training call was containment. Can you stay contained as you feel the little bubblings of these things? But don't shut them down and not get overly activated and keep building and building and building so that eventually, oh, I can feel the big activation of that old shock trauma, that old accident, that old thing that happened that wasn't nice, that all the bad things that occurred to us. Oh, I can actually be with this intense fear response. I hope this makes sense. Just again, remember the reason we shut these things down is we can't handle the feeling of the fear. So we freeze. And then if we still can't, we go into that shutdown and collapse. So part of this work is getting our basics on board. It's like if I use the language example, ABCs, one, two, threes, those are our basics. But to really communicate eloquently, as you will in your mother tongue, you're not thinking about the ABCs, right? When you speak, you don't think of the alphabet, for example. You're just speaking. And so, as we gain more capacity, more regulation, this language of the nervous system will become more second nature, and you'll be able to be with the intensities that come up, which are the old traumas that we're wanting to move out. So, that is a long preamble to these ne this next piece, which I call the four whens. So that's on your sheet. Number one, so when not to resource. So again, resources are those external things that soothe us, that we like, that make us happy, that put us into more calm, more rest, digest, more connection, more safety. And it could be that warm, fuzzy blanket. It could be music. It could be a person. It could be a memory. So, when to resource externally versus internally. And I'm going to talk a little bit about internal resourcing in a moment. So, when to resource externally versus internally, it depends. That's the word. It depends on many factors. Many factors. So again, an external resource, just for definition, anything outside of us, the cup of tea, the music, the funny movie, the dog, the cat, the nature. internal, what many find, and many alumni find, and you will all notice this if you continue with this work, and I hope you do. As you get more capacity, you need external resources less. Now, this doesn't mean you don't want to have some nice cheese with some olive oil and tea, as someone mentioned, but you don't need it to soothe. It just becomes sustenance, good sustenance, but sustenance nonetheless. What'll happen is you'll start to go inside for your resources. You will connect to your body. You will notice your joints, your diaphragms, your posture. You'll notice your kidneys, your adrenals. You'll notice just movement and how you can use that as a way to shift your physiology. So believe me and trust me when I say, and some of the alumni here will vouch for this, the resources shift as you start to become more regulated. It's the same way we want to build our children when they're young, so that they don't always need a sweet treat to behave. They don't always need their blankie to stay safe. And they don't always need the nightlight on in their room. As they become more capacity driven and more triumphant in their ability to take care of themselves and feel themselves and process those difficulties, they need less of those external resources. So, next line down. As more capacity, that's the word, capacity. As more capacity is cultivated, so that's the bigger pool, that's the next word, bigger pool. And more containment, that's the word we learned last week, containment is on board. So, the ability to feel and be with and contain and sense what's happening inside. So, as more containment is on board, more exit paths, that's the next word, exit paths. So, that's the ability to move stressors out. That would be a letting the tears out, right? Letting the movement out, letting the impulse out. Letting the boundary be asserted. So, as more exit paths and better biological embodiment, that's the next word, embodiment. So, when all of this is on more capacity, more containment, more exit paths, and better biological embodiment, the need for external, that's the next word, external resources decreases. It goes down. There's an entire industry in our world built on giving people external resources, right? Fun things, games, foods, addictions, all the things, that keep us somewhat in check as a human species, right? We saw recently what happened when a lot of these external resources were taken away, like sport and going to the gym and movies and things like that. It really showed, wow, are we able to just be with ourselves without all these things that we need to go to? Can we just be with ourselves and with our families and know how to connect without all these external resources? Some people were able to, some people struggled a lot more. So this is what we want, is this capacity. Next line down. Again, this is around the four whens. So, when not to resource, but I'm not saying don't resource. I want to be very clear. There is no shame in resourcing. I do it every day, right? But the question is, can we do without when need be to move these stressors out? So, we might consider not, that's the word, going to a resource when we are feeling a somatic experience. So, we might consider not going to a resource when we are feeling a somatic experience. That's the two words there, bubbling up or are already present. At this time, we might stay. It's another way to say stick, stay with But this time we might stick with what is being felt somatically, so in the body, so we can access it, and integrate it. Integrate, we could say, is a fancy word for heal. We move it out and our system rearranges. And it's like, oh, I don't have that in me anymore. We might cognitively know that, but we feel a little lighter sometimes when we've had that cry or we've had that shake or we've said a difficult thing that we've been holding in inside. While we might be terrified to bring that out and to realize it, so often people were like, oh, I feel so much better. I had such a weight on my back or a weight on my shoulders by keeping that in, right? So those words are another example of capacity. We've just moved something out of our swimming pool and there's just more space. Next line down. So again, this last line is about considering not resourcing from time to time to see if you can hang out with the uncomfortable. Usually it's an uncomfortable sensation, emotion, somatic experience. So next line down, second from the bottom. But making the choice. So but and then making the choice. Choice, again, higher brain, choice. To not dive into the felt sense, that somatic experience. So, your choice to not dive in and honoring, that's the next word, honoring our limits by using an internal or external or internal resource is healing in itself. Healing in itself. So, I'll read that again. But making the choice, the higher brain choice, to not dive into the felt sense or the emotion or the sensation, and honoring our limits by using a resource, internal, external, is healing in itself. Does that make sense? It means you are choosing and you're stopping that reptilian brain, that old habit that just dives for that thing. This is where, again, we will find, and we know there is a lot of addiction in the world, and it makes sense. It makes complete sense. We are looking to self-soothe and bring ourselves down or bring ourselves up. And there's so many things that can do that, right? And so this choice starts to shift the pathways. It starts to shift the pathways. And even if you make the choice to go to a resource. And I want to say again, there's nothing wrong with going to a resource. But when you make the choice and you say, I am going to use this right now because I need a little help, that is shifting the pattern. And you're not just doing it unconsciously. And I've worked with many people, say, with eating disorders. And they're like, I didn't know what happened. And before I knew it, I had eaten half of the cupboard of whatever. Because I needed that soothing. And so, again, this ability to consciously pause and say, you know what, I actually need a little bit of this, and I'm going to let that happen because right now I'm feeling a lot and I need to go to work. I need to parent. I need to do the things, right? There was a time, I don't have this problem anymore, when I got out of functional freeze. Or I should say, I was starting to get at a functional freeze and I was terrified to fly. And I have never been in a plane crash. I had no trouble with flying. I needed to have candies on me. Like I had to suck on something and not just for my ears. It helped just, it gave me something to do. And it helped soothe me a little bit. And now I think I still have candies in my bag that have been there for 2 years because I haven't had to touch them. But they're still there. They're still there just in case, right? So again, that just shows, oh wow, I am able to not even resource now. I'm more regulated and I am regulated going on that flight, very aware of what the situation is. And it's pretty safe, all things considered, right? It's just this weird thing that we do as humans, right? So again, use your resources strategically and consciously. Next line down. Overriding, So overriding is just a fancy word for pushing through, ignoring. Overriding our capacity makes creates, sorry, creates. Overriding our capacity creates more strain and survival stress and is counterproductive. Counterproductive. Remember those beach balls. So, I'll use myself as the example. Let's say I'm being really stupid and I'm like feeling a little survival stress on that plane. It would be silly for me to not have a candy, to not listen to some music, to not maybe have a glass of wine, right? Those sorts of things. Because being in a state of survival stress for 9 hours, say on a long flight, that's not good for your system. You will come out of that stressed, fatigued, and your immune system will be compromised because you've been revving for that whole time. And you probably will go into a bit of shutdown to maintain being on that flight. So, again, don't override. Use your resources strategically, intelligently, and pick and choose your battles when you might want to consider, I'm not going to try this right now. I'm not going to try this right now. Number three, page number three. When not to orient. So I'm wondering from everyone here who has been finding that orienting as you learn it for the first time has been helpful. And for those who are here, who has found orienting to not really do much? Just let yes say yes, helpful, no, not helpful. And if it's not helpful, that's okay. Because when I first learned how to orient, back in 2008, I thought the practitioner asking me to do that was absolutely out of her mind. True story, because I was so functionally frozen, so frozen that it made no sense to me to look out in the room. And it was a really small room. So she was also not the best practitioner for doing that with someone. I had nothing to look at, right? And so that's the other thing. It's not very fun to orient in a tiny box without any pictures or plants or windows to look at. So some of you are saying helpful, sometimes yes, sometimes no, some not helpful, more dizzy. Yeah. And so again, as you're going to learn, depending on our history, orienting is just a little too much. It's too much for the visual system. It's too much for our internal processing. And so we need to maybe consider, and we teach this in the course, orient a little closer. Some for some, just looking at their hands is enough. Looking at the cup right in front of them, that is also orienting. It doesn't have to be far out into the distance. So back to this. Thank you everyone for your comments. When not to orient. So, number one, or the first bullet point, this is so individual, as I just said. So individual. It's also defensive. We need to orient to make sure we don't get hit by something. When we're driving, we should be defensively orienting all the time. And we, I believe, get into accidents because we get a little too comfortable in our very cushy cars with, the windows rolled up, the music blaring, we're talking to people, and we forget we're in this thing that's going at a fast clip on a motorway. It's like you want to be actually quite defensive and chill because you can be defensively orienting and still connected, but aware. So orienting comes in many fashions. It can be defensive. It can be exploratory to look at the nice ocean, to look at the trees, etc. But orienting, next line down, orienting can take us out of processing internal sensation. That's the next word, sensation. Because it's taking us into the environment. So this is this weird catch 22. We're feeling hard things inside, and it might help us contain what's happening by orienting and we're resourcing to the trees or to the sun or whatever. But it can also take us out of what we are feeling inside. So that's where you have to make that judgment call. Is it time to stay with this internal sensation? Or is it time to actually play the card of I gotta resource to something that isn't inside? I gotta resource to something outside. And that's where orienting can be very handy for some of us. Next line down. I've already kind of said this, but that's in brackets, but it's better, meaning orienting, it's better than disconnecting from ourselves and our environment. So, who here has had such intense sensations in the past or memories that we dissociate or we go into a freeze or a shutdown? Right? It's too much, it's too much. I'm out. And we literally shut down our senses. And many people live shut down without feeling their bodies because the past has been too intense. So, I would rather you resource, I would rather you orient than shut down more. Right? Shut down a little less by connecting with the environment if you're feeling that heavy sensation, that scary sensation. Next line down. You have to be the judge. That's the word, the judge. It's your system. And this is why I really refrain from saying, if you feel this sensation, do this. If this emotion comes in, do that. And this is where learning this language, this new language, it's going to be a bit messy and a little clunky at the beginning because you've got to trial and error how your system responds in all sorts of different moments. When you're more tired, when you have more energy, when you have more space, you know, we don't typically live in a very monotonous, homogenous world where the exact same things happen every day. And then we're different. Even if the exact same things happen every day, we go to work, we make food, we take care of things, run errands, have a little fun, maybe, hopefully. But even in those equations of life that are always the same variables, we're different, right? We're different. And so you have to be the judge and know that, oh, wow, I'm feeling this intense thing. My typical go to is to orient, to come out of my body and connect. And today I actually don't want to do that. I actually feel a desire to move. So this comes back to cue following impulse. And that will give you the upper hand in gaining this new language even better because you aren't going into the script of every time I feel this intense thing, I need to do this. You see? Every time I feel this intense thing, I need to pause and ask the question, what does my body want to do in this moment? And it could be many things. And that's the part that you have to create and trial and error on your own. Next line down, you have to learn, I just said this, you have to learn how to experiment. Experiment is the word. Experiment with what you can and cannot tolerate. Again, this comes back to not being a superhero, really listening and being having grace for your body and just going, you know, this isn't the day to dive into this big thing, and that's okay. Trust me, it'll come back. It'll come back in a way that might be more spacious and you have more time for it. This also funnels back to a common thing in our world, and this came up in another call the other day, was this push, almost like a survival stress push to heal as fast as we can by doing more and more and more and more. I'm going to see another. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm going to go to that course and I'm going to learn this thing and I'm going to learn that technique. Oh, and I'm also doing Irene's course and then I'm going to go see this person. And it's just this like, but that also is indicative for some of us being very type A, that go, 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 and give me everything so that I have everything. But then that can also overwhelm us. So it's finding that balance of what we need and when. Next line. Three, when not to take a deep breath. This one is so interesting because we have learned, many of us have learned breathing techniques and breath work. And I believe that has a time and a place, but it really depends in terms of building capacity and moving survival stress out. We want to, as best we can, follow our breath and let it do what it wants, as opposed to trying to structure it into what we think it should be. So I'll give an example in a second. So, first line, same points for breath as for orienting. Everything I just said above, under number two, and not to orient, applies to breath. Next line down. Sometimes we need to take a deep breath. So the next line down, sometimes we just need extra oxygen. That's the final word. Or we need to release waste product, carbon dioxide. This is just basic metabolism. If you're running up and down on the spot, you're moving around, you're going upstairs, you're doing laundry, you're shifting things in your home, you are going to need more oxygen and you need to breathe deeper to get the waste products out of just general metabolism. But when we're sitting like we are now and just listening, and yeah, we're using energy, we're using oxygen, but the metabolic need isn't very high. Mine is higher because I'm constantly talking and I'm constantly having to modulate my breath with my talk. If we were to stand up, if everyone was to stand up, instantly the breath is going to change because you're using more muscles and more balance organs to keep yourself from falling over. So that's just real basic physiology 101. What happens with our breath? So, what happens when we have a scare, when we have a little trauma? What often occurs with the breath? Someone in the chat, give me your answers. What happens with the breath? It gets short, it gets held. Yeah. Right? We get scared. That classic deer in the headlights. Oh. What happens when we go into shutdown? Our breath, it goes into what's called low conservation, low oxygen. We get really quiet and really still, which serves a purpose when the threat is real. But when we live in that, what occurs, and this is true for those who are, we could say, you identify, you are living with some form of chronic illness, some form of autoimmune, chronic pain, lifelong traumas where your system went into collapse, shutdown. Again, from my experience, what I often see when I was working with clients, and I see this now in the students I'm working with, there will be this low capacity in the lung, in the diaphragms, in the viscera. The ribs will be tight, the sternum won't be flexible, the clavicles up here will be very stiff because there hasn't been this full expansion in all direction of the breath. And what that does is it limits our ability to take in oxygen and release waste product. So why I wanted to say this is a lot of practices will force breath, right? Breathing, like breaths in, hold, release, all these things in an attempt to, of course, build that capacity. But if you're fighting against the autonomic survival mechanisms that are saying at the core level, you're still in danger, you still need to be collapsed, you still need to be shut down, it actually won't make a difference that sticks. You might feel that increase in oxygen, and some people will feel lightheaded. People can even pass out when they do breath work because it's just too much of an exchange of the oxygen and CO2 and other chemicals, the body chemicals. But what we want, again, when the autonomic nervous system physiology is running the show and it is unconscious, we can't force the breath and then have it stay because it'll go back. So, having worked with many people who have done lots of breath work, often, again, I'm generalizing, what occurs and I see is lots of rigidity in the spine, lots of rigidity in the ribs and all the organs, because there's a lot of force. So again, if one of you or any of you do breath work, listen to if you're pushing and overriding too much. Are you going into a little bit of freezy energy? Are you going into a little bit of dissociative energy? Do you feel a little lightheaded, and that lightheadedness kind of continues throughout the day? So really start to listen to how you breathe, how your habits for breathing might be. There are two lessons in SPSM coming up. One is called Cultivate the Inhale and Cultivate the Exhale. They are not classic breathwork lessons. They're very gentle awareness lessons to feel how the belly and the chest can expand with the breath. All right. What you will find too, as you get more regulation on board and more capacity, your breathing will just start to actually get a little more natural, a little more easy, because all the other structures around it, around your lungs, like the organs, the spine, the joints, start to soften and they start to get more flow. Remember the little pictures I had you draw last week, the circles? When those things are flowing, it contributes to better flow in the lung capacity. And one more piece for those who exercise, very important, whether it's physical activity or structured exercise. I've heard through many, many colleagues and students, they don't change anything in their exercise regime, and they find that their capacity for more ability to breathe and do more intensity goes up with the regulation work. And it's because this system isn't on lockdown, it isn't in shutdown. And so there's just more space for this exchange of nutrients and the chemicals of breath. Okay. Next line. This is the next one, which is when you are not sure what to do. This will happen. You'll be like, oh my God, I'm feeling something. I don't know what to do. Right? So again, that thought process is going to come in there, and that's where you want to catch it in the first three lines. Do not worry. I know that's simple to say, but, and if you worry a little bit, that's okay. And then how can you go back to the basics? Sense your butt on the chair, your feet on the ground. Where are you? Simple things, back to the first aid. My name is, right? This is where I am. It's this day. So when you're not sure what to do, really try not to worry. Try not to put more survival energy into your system. Again, we don't want to add more balls to the pool. Plus, remember, learning, again, this back to the language, learning, that's the word, learning a second language takes practice. Practice and time. So this comes back to how we might fall into old cognitive words of, I'm never going to get this. I suck. This is so hard. I'm always going to fail. These are patterns in our brain that might be ours now, but they weren't ours to begin with. Babies don't come out thinking that they don't know anything, because they're not thinking, right? They're not thinking. They're feeling. They're a little organism of biology, and how we work with them and engage and co-regulate will determine how they start to think about themselves. When their brains start to form thought and feel emotion and process emotion. So if anything, I always say we have to go back to the baby, right? How can you feel the basics, be with them, and try to take the thinking brain a little bit out if it's causing more stress? Next line. So this one is a run-on sentence that will go to the next page. So we'll go to the next page as I go through these next two. So as more neurosensory skills, that's the word skills, as more neurosensory skills come into your repertoire, into your abilities, all the lessons within the labs. So we're just at the beginning. The end, there's about 32 lessons that you will do, 32 lessons, neurosensory exercises, all the lessons coupled within the labs, coupled, that's the word, so connected, coupled with the theory. These are the ABCs and the 1, 2, 3s. Page 4. So all this together, the lessons, the neurosensory exercises, this that we're learning, the theory, we start to string. That's the next word, string together the words of internal somatic awareness. Internal somatic awareness. We start to string together, we start to build, we start to put together these words. I have that in quotes because it's this language analogy I'm talking about of internal somatic awareness. And you see, this is where just doing movement for the sake of doing movement, there's a lot of popular hype right now, more so in the social media world. So if you're not in that world, this might not be familiar to you, but who's seen lots of these advertisement for somatic exercise? You're going to do somatic exercise to open up your hips and release all your trauma in 2 days, these things. And while, yes, some of these movements are very accurate and I might teach them myself through the Feldenkraisian lens, I hope everyone here, and there's like 223 people on the call right now, I hope everybody here sees how complex we're working here. This isn't just, I'm going to show you a bunch of movements to do. You have to bring in this higher brain, the sensory aspect, the environmental aspect, how you resource. For some people, doing those movements, they'll feel nothing. For others, it'll overwhelm them. And for others, it'll just be a nice little stretch routine. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it is not enough to get to this dysregulation and this building capacity that we really want to work with. Just like when a baby is learning to walk, you can't say to them, I need you to do a bunch of these movements with your pelvis to learn how to walk. It won't work. It takes time. Think how long it takes. Anybody who here has raised a child, it can take up to a year for a human to get on their 2 feet. That shows how complex our systems are. How long does it take for animals in the wild, like a deer, baby deer, to come out and start walking, or a calf coming from a mama cow? It can be like minutes, and they're shaky. That shows how much more complex we are, this inability for us to just get up and start walking and knowing how to eat grass right away or suck on mom's, nipple, that kind of thing. So again, I just want to really at this beginning stage hit home how this is so much more than just doing the lessons. It is, and it's how are you integrating it into your life as well. So next line down, final page here, second one. With practice, we begin to have, so again, this is building all the things we've been talking about. With practice, we begin to have our favorite internal resources. Internal. We go to without conscious thought. So what will start to happen as we get more versed in this language is before we know it, we're naturally orienting. We're naturally feeling our bums and our pelvis. We're naturally just listening to our breath without directing our focus there. We're naturally shifting our body to be more comfortable. We're listening to our cues of hunger and temperature regulation way more strategically and more refined. So this shows that we're building capacity. So next line down, with practice, we begin to naturally, that's the word, naturally move to our internal systems without conscious thought. As I just said, this means we are becoming more fluent. Fluent is the word in the language of our somatic experience. We are getting more comfortable with it. Again, our somatic experience. And our environment. We are growing nervous system capacity. This is nervous system capacity. This means we are getting better at attuning to ourselves. Attuning is the word. Not to mention knowing what we need and when. Again, I always go back to the baby. What do we need to do with an infant? We need to attune to them. We don't want to fix them. We can't tell them, stop crying, even though that happens. Stop crying. Why are you crying? It's like, well, they're crying because they're in distress and they need attunement and they need help finding soothing through your co-regulation, right? And then they get their needs met and then they have a little dose of regulation. And then that happens over and over and over again. So you adults, we are attuning to ourselves and giving our bodies what it needs. So we're in many ways, in essence, doing what for some of us we never got when we were young. So it's really not a reparenting, it is a re-remembering of what our biology needs. It's a re-remembering of what our biology needs. Next line down, third from the bottom. So for many of us, this process of better attuning to ourselves becomes more fluent in our somatic experience, and being with it with awareness is new territory. That's the word, new territory. Similar to how a newborn baby is constantly having a new experience. It's just remarkable when you think about it, the first time a little one sees sunlight, right, or tastes mom's milk or bottle-fed formula, whatever it is, it's like, this is a new experience. This has never happened before. The first time they have solid food, new experience. The first time they have teeth, we all know that isn't pleasant for them. The first time they see an animal, what is that, right? It's just so many new experiences, so many new wires being built. So for us, while all of us have tasted food and we know and we've seen animals and we've seen the sun, what will happen as you start to attune to this stuff is you might start to feel a little strange. I'm not sure if anybody's felt that. I know our alumni have said this. So you're going to be like, I feel a little different. Something is different here. And what that is this. It's experiencing for many, most likely, being alive for the first time because you're actually listening to the system and you're giving it its needs that are healthy, healthy needs. So, final two lines here. This is how building capacity, building is that first word. This is how building capacity creates nervous system regulation in an adult. That word is regulation. It isn't the fancy shaking lesson. It's not the toning lesson where you make sound. It's not the tapping thing. All that stuff can be in service to building capacity, but the real regulation is built as we attune on demand, on need to our systems, and we offer it to our system, and we take care of the stressors that come in. We don't let them stick. We let them leave the building. We let it exit the swimming pool. And then we come back to our baseline. And we do that over and over and over again, just like we would with an infant who's learning for the first time how to self-regulate. Final line. Whereas for an infant, so an infant, I always go back to the infant. Their self-regulation is created via co-regulation with another human as a result of that attunement, right? So we as adults are building this capacity and regulation in a very different way than how a little one would have. They need to co-regulate with an adult. They can't do it on their own. This we know for a fact. They need another human or someone older than them to co-regulate with, so their needs are being met. As an adult, what's beautiful is we may not have a partner or someone with us, but we can co-regulate oddly with ourselves, with the environment, with our resources. If we couldn't do this, we wouldn't be here. We already do it naturally, right? So now we're putting the focus on it being more intentional and with positive resources and attuning to our biology, the insides, as opposed to always attuning to a technique or a strategy or an external resource to find that soothing mechanism. All right. So, like I said at the beginning, as simple as this concept is of the four whens and practicing somatic first aid, it really forms in many ways, I think, the thesis, the structure of how we're putting together all these lessons you're learning. And as you can see, it's a very non-linear script. And so this is where we need to bring our brains out of how many of us have been taught in classic school system, which is everything is on a list. You got to memorize everything on the list, and then you have to regurgitate the list, and then you get an A. But if you don't regurgitate, you don't do so well. This is where this enables our creativity and our ability to be more, I like to use the word holographic, which just means three-dimensional, and it's constantly moving. Because the world is constant, well, technically, we are constantly moving, and our system is constantly moving, and the people around us are constantly moving. And there's a lot of stuff that comes at us that isn't always nice, and some of it is nice. And how can we make use of these tools and these lessons to keep building this language of nervous system awareness, attunement, capacity, with the final kind of the goal, if you will, is greater regulation, greater regulation. So, thank you everyone for hanging out with me live, and also to the folks listening to the recording, watching the recording. Thanks for popping in, not live. I know that's not possible for everyone to be here live. As always, recording will come up on the site soon for those live, and Seth's Q&A call is this Thursday. And then next week he will actually be doing the training call, because I will be en route in a plane with my candies. I'll tell you if I use them next time. yeah, I'll be teaching overseas, and then I'll be back later in the fall. All of the schedule is on the training call page, so you know when it's me, when it's Seth. There's one call where we have to offer you a pre-recording, but it's still me teaching the same information, the same material. So, thank you to everyone. Thanks to Ari to being here on the back end to make sure everything goes smoothly. Rebecca, thank you for your chat typing, and we'll see everyone in a little bit. Take good care and remember to ask questions in the threads and forums. Don't be shy. If you don't even know how to formulate your question, just say, I don't know how to formulate this, but this is what's happening, right? So use that muscle of yours of asking for help and getting things clear, so that you can move forward and not stay stuck in anything that you might be stuck in. All right, everybody, take care. Bye.